The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
And this is The Hard Shoulder. Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock this evening. A little bit later tonight in a hotel in Dublin, Savills Ireland, the leading property agents, they are hosting a very exciting event looking ahead to November's presidential election in the US. There will be Gina London, Katrina Perry and former White House Press Secretary and host of the Sean Spicer Show, Sean Spicer himself, who is with me in studio. Sean, pleasure. Thanks a million for coming in. Yeah, good to see you. I've spoken on the phone to you a couple of times.
Here in Dublin.
Yeah, this is very much a flying visit for you. No chance to visit long-lost relatives in West Cork.
No, luckily, I've done that in the past. So this time, it's land this morning, do the event tonight, and out tomorrow, which is unfortunate, but I've got kids, they have events, and I think the idea of spending the weekend in Dublin wasn't an easy sell for the family.
You come here at a kind of an exciting time for our own scene, yeah.
You know, I thought to myself, coming over, we're going to talk U.S. politics tonight, but I land and you see, I mean, every paper was the Taoiseach resigning, and he was just obviously in the U.S. for a very prolonged visit.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. It was funny because he attended a lot of events that normally aren't part of the equation. There's a big dinner called the Gridiron Dinner, which is a big gathering of our political and media establishment. And the Taoiseach was one of the guests there. And they haven't had a foreign head of state outside of a U.S. president in decades. Mm. And he was there. And I'm trying to remember, there were a couple other events that I kept saying to myself, like, does he just want to stay? And so when I got here and I saw the news that he had resigned, I thought to myself, maybe he was just soaking it in.
Yeah, relishing the last few days.
Well, I know that there was one instance where he couldn't make it over because of COVID. So
yeah,
maybe this was making up for lost time.
Yeah, so he met Joe Biden, of course, incumbent, and whoever takes over will be meeting the next president next year. Simon Harris, it is likely to be. I don't expect you to kind of know the ins and outs of who sits around the cabinet table in Ireland, but he's a senior minister.
Yeah,
very young. Well,
wow.
He breaks the record for the youngest Taoiseach of this country set by Leo Varadkar, actually.
No kidding.
Who was only 38, I think, when he took over.
All right, well, there you
so
go.
Yeah, we keep picking them young, and then the problem is they retire young. So you've the opposite issue in the States.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all out, fellas.
Yeah, we've got the old the other end of the spectrum on the age was.
What advice would you give to, say, a Simon Harris or whoever it is takes over, who, let's assume that it is Donald Trump for a moment, who wins the presidential election, and they're handing over the bowl of shamrocks?
Well, there's two things I would say. Number one is, we have a very unique relationship with Ireland. And I had some conversations that I won't get too into, but when I was in the White House and I had met with some of the folks from the Taoiseach's office during the first visit, and then subsequently, I stayed in touch with some of the folks when Leo took over. And I said to them, like, remember, you guys punch way above your weight. If you think about it, there's no other country that comes over to the United States and captures the attention that happens when the Taoiseach comes. There are dinners and parades and events, and there is such a special bond, very different than any other country, even to England. I mean, the Queen or the Prime Minister comes over and it's nice. There's something that captivates the U.S. when the Taoiseach comes over.
Mm.
And so my first thing is, on the one hand, take advantage of that and understand how much love there is in the United States for this island. But secondly, don't take advantage of it. And what I mean by that is, you know, I saw the Taoiseach this time really lean out on the Hamas thing and almost chide the U.S. And at some point, if this meeting isn't as enjoyable, if it becomes more of a policy discussion than a celebration of our special bond, I don't know how that those days go anymore. Does that make sense?
Like, it does. Because
I feel like right now, there's always been so much joy and everybody gets together. If it becomes more of a bilateral meeting on policy issues, the dynamic changes. And that's not to say you can't bring them up, but if you start using the event as a means to advance an agenda, the U.S. government is going to treat it much differently.
Yeah, because that's interesting. There will be a pressure, say, if it is Donald Trump on somebody like Simon Harris, who's kind of would consider himself progressive and liberal, to go over there and
lecture.
And
if that
happens, think that would be bad advice?
Horrible advice. I mean, well, it would be good advice not to do it. It would be horrible to do it. And I say that because they have every right to do it. We cherish our First Amendment right, obviously. But again, it's the nature of this. If another country of this size came over to the United States, they would not get the time and the audience But because of that relationship that exists, and so if you know, it's sort of like going to a relative's house for a holiday. It's an enjoyable time. If you start turning it into a debate, they're not going to utilize the dynamic changes.
They
very
might
quickly.
Invite you back for the
well,
next
I
holiday.
I wasn't going to say that. They might invite you back, but it may be a much more hastened visit.
Yeah, well, is that the like you know Donald Trump on a personal level? I mean, is there the likelihood he'd say, "I'm not doing that again next year"? Well, I'm not standing there and having that guy lecture me.
Just, I would say that the default is he owns property here, as you know. He loves talking about the golf and everything that Ireland has to offer and all of the direct financial investment that we have here as a country. But if you threaten that and start to attack him or his policies, yeah, he's going to delegate you to a staffer and say, why don't you meet just like we would again with another country. That's how that's, you know, the diplomatic protocol would be such that's how it would go. And as an Irish American, I'd hate to see that. Love the festivities and the relationship that exists over those days that the Taoiseach comes.
Let's dive into U.S. politics then for a moment. What are the issues that will define this election?
So let me just step back for a second for the audience here who don't maybe follow. You know, you guys have enough to follow now.
Yeah.
In the United States, we vote by electoral college. Each state has an amount of electoral votes based on the size of their population and how many seats they have in the House of Representatives, plus the two senators. There are eight states. Some political pundits say six. I have said it's eight states. That's 97 electoral votes. You need 270 to win. So the reason that's important is sometimes political pundits will look at the country and say Trump's up 53, 47 or Biden. We don't vote as a nation. We vote by state, and then those states send electoral votes to their respective state capitals. And when you look at the states that matter and the electoral votes that are at stake, you know, immigration right now, I live in Virginia. It is the number one issue for voters, immigration. And you don't have to have a degree in geography to realize that we're not a border state. States in New England are border states now. The amount of fentanyl that's coming in through our southern border, we just had a young woman raped by someone in our country illegally. And those issues are paramount right now. So it's whether it's crime committed by people in the country illegally, fentanyl, concerns about terrorism coming in through the southern border that the FBI director just warned of, the economic consequences. So those are I've always believed that elections come down to two fundamental things, your economic security and your personal safety security. And that manifests itself in different ways. But those issues are paramount right now in each and every one of those states.
Are the Trump campaign exploiting those fears?
Absolutely.
And exaggerating?
Well, but both sides
exaggerating
are
the risk. We wouldn't be following this in any great detail. So, you know, when we talk about it, and Jeff Kuhner usually joins me on a Thursday from a WRKOAM 680 radio in Boston, great pal of mine now, Jeff. And he talks about this as well. And so then I kind of have to go off and look into it and kind of find the likes of, you know, NBC and CNN and the New York Times, the Washington Post and all this kind of pouring through the data. And they say, yes, these awful incidents occur. And we're not denying the reality or the horror of them, but they're kind of outliers. There's no immigrant crime wave.
Sure. But every campaign, if you go back, I mean, there's two issues at stake. One, what's driving people to vote and what will make a difference. And again, let's go back to, you look at how many of these states were divided, you know, that I mentioned, the eight states that I mentioned, how many were decided by 10, 15, 20,000 votes. This is not a lot, right? That's less than attend a football game in most stadiums, right? So my point is that you're playing on the periphery, on the edges of these states, trying to find out what's driving people. You can have two separate discussions. What's driving the issue? And then is it really that, you know, what you're getting at is it that big of a deal, or are both sides stoking it? Joe Biden talks incessantly about how democracy is under attack. Democracy is not under attack. I mean, we can still vote. We are a free country. But is he stoking that principle? Absolutely. That's what candidates do on both sides. Biden will tell you that the economy is great. Most people will tell you that they feel like it's a major concern. And even within the issue of inflation, there's core inflation, right, which is rent, food, housing, gas. And then there's the overall inflation, which takes into consideration everything else. The White House wants the better number of the two. The Trump campaign will be using core inflation because that's what people, you know, is most tangible to most
okay.
people.
So I guess what you're effectively saying is perception is reality. And if people
absolutely
perceive this,
oh,
immigration is the issue,
well,
then that's the issue.
But that's why I'm saying to you, Kieran, that I've been doing this 30 years this year. My first campaign was in 1994. I know I don't look it, right? It's, but
you could be our next 37-year-old.
No, I couldn't. By 15 you know? Years, I couldn't do that. But here's the thing, that when I say economic security and personal security, those are very inherent and very personal, visceral feelings. If I don't feel safe walking down the street, you can throw me a million statistics and tell me how the streets of Dublin are safe and there hasn't been a crime. But if when I'm walking down the street, if I get the sense that I don't feel secure, it doesn't matter what you tell me or how many statistics. If I feel as though I'm not saving for my family, if I'm not putting away for a vacation, or I don't want to go out to dinner maybe because I don't feel economically secure, no government statistic can change that. And so what you're doing in a campaign is trying to play to those strings and figure out how to pull them.
So, you know, when you suggest that the Biden administration are kind of exaggerating things when they talk about democracy being under attack, do you think all of that is hyperbole? You know, when people talk
Absolutely.
About the country being close to civil war.
Do I worry about the fabric of our country? Do I worry about the traditions that make America unique? Absolutely. Do I believe what makes America unique is under attack right now by folks on the left? Absolutely.
Makes America unique that is under attack?
I think our policies are the hard. I mean, we're attacking police, we're decriminalizing crime, we're not valuing hard work. All of the principles that made America America, I think, are under attack by the left. But I think there's a big bridge between that and civil war as we know it, meaning an actual, you know, person on person with weapons. Do I think that the ethos of the country is at stake this election? Absolutely. Joe Biden has been the most progressive president ever, and he gladly wears that badge. Mm. And it scares me. We have entered a world of identity politics in the United States. We don't choose people on their merit anymore. We choose them whether or not they check a box.
Yeah, and that's true of both sides, isn't it?
There's a difference.
It is true of the Republicans as well, isn't it? It's tribalism. It's kind of, I don't care what he says, he's my guy. He's wearing the right hat.
There's a difference between, for example, both in terms of the two most obvious ones are when Joe Biden chose Kamala Harris, he said, I'm going to choose a black woman. Okay, full stop. That's it. It wasn't, I'm going to choose the best person. I'm going to choose a black woman. That's it. No matter who else is qualified or whether that person is the best person. When he chose Ketanji Brown Jackson to fill the Supreme Court seat, he said, I'm going to choose a black woman. Same thing. He has every right to do that. Don't get me wrong. But when your mindset is, I'm going to choose someone based entirely on their gender and their skin, not on their qualifications, that is a very different dynamic. Does it go into play in every politician's mind? Absolutely. But when you start by saying the only selection that you're going to use for people is gender, skin color, etc., then you have changed the dynamic of what we're supposed to be all about, which is a meritocracy.
But what I was getting at was this idea, I guess, that you've got two camps who are kind of further and further apart.
And
you know, you people love these kind of heat maps where you've got kind of red and blue voters, and they're much closer to the center the further back you go in election cycles. And now they're kind of just way out on the edges. And sometimes it's a case that it's just the people on the fringes get kind of the most airtime and everybody else is in the middle. But I kind of get the sense in the States there is real division, actually. It's harder for people to just disagree.
You're asking the right. Oh, 100%. It's uncomfortable now. And I think that what we have forced is people to take sides, right? So you take this issue of transgender individuals, specifically men in women's sports. Something that women fought hard for. There's a thing in the United States called Title IX, which gave women access to funding and scholarships and all this stuff. Something was a huge accomplishment for women. And now you have men dominating women's sports because they're claiming that they identify as a woman. That is a big change in our culture. And I think literally as a father of a daughter, I worry about something like that and go, you know, I had hoped that she would have opportunities that previous generations haven't had. Now I'm wondering, we're moving backwards. We're giving men the same opportunities all over again because they identify in a different way. So those are the kind of things where I think you're finding more and more that tribalism. You're either on one side or the other.
When he retakes office, if he does win the election, Donald Trump, given, as I say, you know, you worked with him and you know him and you know people who are around him and people who will be in his administration. What is the work that he didn't get done in the first term that he wants to complete in term two?
Well, I think obviously immigration is going to be at the forefront of that. And it's gotten so much worse. So I would say that that's going to be number one. Number two, there's a lot of corporate tax.
Sorry, not to interrupt, but what does that look like? Does that look like, you know, build the wall again?
I think the wall is one thing, but I think we've seen, you know, Joe Biden was very proud of the fact that on the first day he rescinded 94 executive actions with respect to the border. Of course, he says now that you can't do anything by executive action, but he undid 94 of Trump's actions. So you could clearly do something. I think Trump will reinstate many of those things, allowing people to file for asylum in third party countries, reinstating an agreement with Mexico. I mean, to how they handle and process people coming through their country, closing. I mean, there's a lot of basics now. I mean, we have constant news media reports of people coming through barriers in Texas. And just to put this in context, there are 28 legal points of entry in Texas from Mexico. That's not where people are coming in from. They're literally cutting the wire and the fencing and just walking in. I think the first thing to do would be to shore up a lot of that kind of stuff. Then there's a lot of economic things that need to get done based on how things were passed in the first Trump administration. There's a lot of things that will expire, specifically tax cuts that had sunset provisions in them that have to be redone. You'll see a lot of that corporate stuff. I think there'll be a lot of cultural things that I just talked about with respect to both crime and then culture with respect to the trans movement.
Would you serve in his administration again?
So, look, the answer is no.
Why?
Why is because very simply, for all of my adult life, I just said for 30 years I've been in campaigns. I started my first one in 1994 in Connecticut in New England. I did that. I served 26 years in the military. I've worked in government. I served my time. I will be supportive. I was on the board of the U.S. Naval Academy. I served as a White House commissioner on the White House fellow. Will I take an appointment as a non-paid advisor in some way? Possibly, yeah. I will not go into government.
Okay.
Because I like I said, I feel like I served my time. It's a huge burden financially and on your family. I coach my wife reminds me, I'm the assistant coach of my daughter's basketball team.
Chief bottle washer.
Yes,
that's what
exactly.
We call them.
Okay, well, but it's when you're doing the jobs that I've done, you really do sacrifice time with your family.
Yeah.
And I enjoy, like you mentioned at the outset, I've got a show right now. Everyone can subscribe, the Sean Spicer Show. You can get on YouTube or Apple Podcasts. I love it. I've been a spokesman my whole life. To wake up and be able to say what I think and what I believe and to give analysis and not worry that it's somebody else's is so liberating, so enjoyable. I'm 52 years old. Mm. I want to spend a few years doing fun stuff. Like I said, coaching and going to do things with my family. And when you're doing high level government stuff, you cannot do that.
Are there things you regret about when you were doing high level government stuff? You know, people kind of talk about you about promulgating kind of
really?
Fake news. I think they do, Sean. I think they do.
It's funny. I was just listening to a roundtable discussion on RTE before I left, and they were asking a very similar question about regrets. Do I learn from my mistakes? Yes. Are there things that I look and say, I'll even walk out of here and go, you know what I should have said, right? I believe firmly there's a military ethos.
There are little regrets. I mean, big regrets. Do you kind of look at that level of division that we talked about and think, God, did I feed into that?
Oh, absolutely. But there are days, I mean, I joke with people that when I watch sometimes clips, I feel like an angry leprechaun, you know, yelling at people from the podium. And I go, I wish I hadn't let that person get my goat like that. I wish I had been more disciplined. But I learn from it and I go, okay, how do you handle that better the next time? That's different than a major regret. It's interesting though, when you ask that, Kieran, because I do, I will, like I said, full stop. Are there things that I would do better? Have I learned lessons? 100%. Yes, absolutely. But it's funny how those questions always go in one direction, right? I've never heard anyone in the Biden administration get asked a similar question in our country. Obviously, I don't listen every day. But I just funny that everyone on the right in our country, especially in the U.S. media, constantly gets asked, like, what do you regret? How will you do this? there's never an issue about what happens on the left. It's, you know, chalked up to mistakes. Joe Biden consistently misrepresents his record, and never once is he referred to as a liar. And again, I'm not, but it's just the dual, there is a dual system in how our country looks at the two sides.
So listen, given you're the chief bottle washer for the basketball team, are you unlikely to be the U.S. ambassador to Ireland the next time you visit here?
You know, that's that would be the exception to the rule.
Okay.
There is something about serving in that capacity. I will tell you right now, if you want to know if there's any merit to that discussion, after the November election, look at the makeup of the U.S. Senate. And we would have to have at least a couple seats majority for me to get through. I think Democrats would have a field day if they still had the majority.
Be a bit of fun, wouldn't it?
No.
Would for the rest of us.
You have no idea. I think that people have no clue what a confirmation hearing looks like. So the answer is, if I do believe we'll take the U.S. Senate back potentially by two or three seats. That would be the only possibility, because I think that would be an opportunity of a lifetime. Right. And it's a very nice house.
Possibility, yeah.
Very nice house.
Sean Spicer, former White House Press Secretary, host of the Sean Spicer Show. As he says, you can get it on YouTube or on Apple Podcasts. Sean, thanks a million for joining us.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.